Hello, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. I would like to officially welcome you all to episode 20, where today I will be talking about autism self-advocacy. Now, self-advocacy in autism is crucial. Autistic individuals should have the ability to communicate their thoughts and their feelings confidently, as well as the ability to speak up for oneself and not be afraid of what people will think about them. Now, when a person decides to reveal their autism to the world, it is important for that individual to know that their civil and disability rights are vital and that they matter. And my next guest has been a champion and a voice in making sure other autistic people are seen and heard. She is a beauty pageant star, actress, singer, model, author. I mean, what does my next guest not do? And she's here to share her life's work and autism self-advocacy, not just in the United States, but around the world. Please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Rachel Barcelona. Rachel, hi. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this. Before I begin, I would just like to say a special shout out to my girlfriend. As some of you may not know, if you were hearing this or watching this, I actually have a new microphone that I am using. This microphone was given to me as a Christmas gift by my girlfriend to enhance my voice on this podcast so that I'm able to interview guests a lot more clearly. Rachel, I really wanted to just first and foremost thank you for coming on today. We've known each other for a few years now, and I've really been quite inspired by not only just outspoken, but the way that your life story has been. I know that you have overcome a lot of obstacles to get to where you are now, and I think you're a real inspiration for a lot of young autistic people out there, especially young autistic women and girls, since autism has not really been diagnosed in women a lot in earlier years, but now that it is becoming more about it. And I really applaud you for your bravery and your courage to talk about living autistic so authentically and so unapologetically.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, that's always something I strive to do, is be unapologetic about autism and other things that I have, because I've recently been diagnosed with a lot of other things that I haven't talked about much. But
really?
Autism, yeah, and I would love to talk about that too, but autism has been my main focus in life, and my goal is to show people that if you're autistic or have something else, you don't have to be ashamed of it.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more on that. So when I usually start a podcast episode with a guest, I always like to start from the very beginning. So my first question to you, Rachel, is when were you first diagnosed autistic? When did you find out that you were autistic? And what was your reaction to all of it?
Well, I feel like I'm kind of an outlier because I was diagnosed at 3 years old, and this was when it wasn't called autism yet. It was called PDD-NOS, and then it was called Asperger's, and at such a young age, I thought my mom was always swearing when she was talking to the doctors and the principal, and I was always like, "Mom, stop it," because I had no idea, but I still remember being in the principal's office, and there were doctors everywhere, and they just told my mom, who was a nurse at the time, she's a doctor now, but she worked with these guys, and they just told her, "Barbara, she's not gonna accomplish anything or make any friends, just give up." And that really stuck with me for a long time, but I'm glad my mom never gave up on me.
Absolutely. I think that is fantastic of what your mom has really done for you. Instead of listening to what the naysayers have to say, your mom decided, you know what? You just watch and see what happens when she gets older. She's going to make a life for herself, whether you see it in 5 years, whether you see it in 10 years, she's going to make a name for herself. And it's interesting because I feel like we both had very supportive mothers growing up that always wanted the best for us growing up. And when you're diagnosed and when you find out, it takes a long time to really realize, okay, Maybe this explains why I'm having a hard time communicating at school. Maybe this is why sometimes I'm struggling with the social skills or the verbal skills or even the verbal cues. So it's interesting how when you think about it and you react to it, it's kind of like it all makes sense a little bit. So my next question for you actually is, tell me a little bit about your life growing up on the autism spectrum. What was that like for you? Because I know that when we have talked previously, it hasn't always been easy.
It was definitely not easy. And for me, growing up, I just thought it was life, even though I didn't understand the medical side of it. I just thought it was growing up and being just vibing, as people say. But I don't know. I guess people always tell me whenever I go to a lot of these autism conferences and I meet a lot of people who have autism, and they tell me so many stories about how they had to mask, but I feel like I never had to. I never wore a mask. Even when I was in middle school, I just felt like this is who I am, and people obviously did not like me for who I am, but I guess I kind of had this thing where it's like, I can't change it, so why even bother to change it? Yeah, I've even had points where I'm just like, I'm too lazy to try and change myself, and if people don't like me, who cares? So, but I did have my moments where it was so hard to make friends growing up. I went to a lot of social skills groups where I was the only girl and everyone else was a boy.
Wow.
So that was really hard. And even in middle school, I went to a really, really strict Christian school where you had to be a certain way, act a certain way. We all wore uniforms. You had to dress a certain way. But even when you weren't wearing a uniform, you had to dress a certain way. But I still carry that sort of guilt and shame. Like, if I kind of had this sort of eccentric behavior, is that why people didn't like me? What if I acted differently? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I just think you're going to find people who like you for who you are, and that's what matters.
And you obviously have now, just given the fact that you have been so confident in who you are, you really couldn't give a you-know-what about what people say. Which is something that is so important. I had absolutely no idea that you didn't mask at all when you were younger, because I masked like crazy growing up to a point where people were just like, wait, you're autistic? And people honestly had that genuine surprise. So the fact that you were so confident that you did not mask at all, I really honestly give it to you, especially given the fact that you were a little girl growing up autistic. And I hope that when you were in the social groups growing up with those boys, they didn't always talk about trains or Thomas the Tank Engine and all that, because
that still happens. I mean, I am 27. I recently had a job as a barista, and everyone there, so it's a cafe in New York, and everybody has a disability. That's the whole point, that we hire people with autism and other disabilities. And I was one of the few girls, again, and all the boys were talking about the train, the MTA, and the subway, and what subway they were taking, and Thomas the train. And at this point, I was just like, just roll with it. And I was talking about, well, I went to the Lego store last time, and I thought it was really cool. Like, you know, my dad taught me that if you're not interested in what someone's saying, you just have to play along with it. But I do have a lot of those interests. The train, maybe not so much, but Legos, I really like that. I wanted to buy a set of Lego flowers for our cafe.
They sell those now?
They do. They have a whole set of Lego flower centerpieces, and I just talked about that. And I made a lot of friends by that, just by talking about their interests and not staying in my bubble. And I think that was the thing, like, ever since I was a kid, everybody knew I was different. I was always the weird kid. I never put a mask on. And I always tried to make friends despite that, but I'll never forget. In middle school, I was crying, and I asked, how come nobody wants to be my friend? And this one girl just coldly told me, well, not everybody can be your friend. And I think that's when I stopped giving a fuck about what people think of me.
You know, that is actually a really great message right there. And the fact that you had someone at the time tell you that not everyone can be your friend, that is a hard but necessary lesson to learn. And the fact that you learned it at such a young age is literally gives you such the confidence now to not really give a sugar honey iced tea about what people think. It took me years until I was fully grown up. I graduated from high school and I moved out to Los Angeles to really kind of figure that out for myself. But there's nothing wrong with, you know, figuring out in different patterns in your life. Some people like you, they really find themselves when they're younger, and people find that out later in life. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the great thing about autism, is that people at some point, they come to fully love themselves for who they are. And as you say, not give a you-know-what about what people think, which is incredible. So you are a beauty pageant star who has been able to showcase a different yet unique kind of beauty. And I pulled up some statistics, not all, but being on this podcast, I love to pull out different accomplishments that my guests have accomplished in their career. So you were the first autistic contestant to compete in Miss Florida and the second autistic contestant to compete for Miss America in 2013. I did not know that, but props to you. You also won Miss International in 2016 and Miss Southeast International in 2017. I'm sure the Play More pageant titles are in there somewhere. What got you into beauty pageants, and what does it mean to you personally and professionally to pave the way for future autistic beauty pageant participants?
It means a lot, and those are just some of the big ones. I really, really enjoyed that, and I'm happy to have paved the way, because I recently tried to do Miss New York, and when I did that, yes, when I was doing that pageant, I felt a sense of happiness to see that a lot of the contestants had neurodiversity or autism or were neurodiverse in some way, and they were open about it, and that would have never happened 10 years ago, or when I was the first contestant to do Miss America with autism, or something like that. It makes me kind of emotional. I keep forgetting stuff, but I just have a lot of pride, and I'm so happy they're being more open about it.
As you should. What you have done for the beauty pageant world in terms of bringing more neurodiverse and especially autistic participants to showcase their beauty, it is super applaudable. I remember watching a video, I think it was sometime during COVID, where they were showcasing your story. And I will be honest with you, I didn't even know that for so long there weren't any neurodivergent or autistic participants in beauty pageants, because for some reason society hasn't really allowed that to happen. But the fact that you kind of broke that glass ceiling and said, hey, this is my autism, but I think it's beautiful, and the fact that you've been able to showcase that for more than 10 years, I give you mad props. And as the saying goes, you might have been the first, but you are for sure not the last. And I think that you really are an inspiration to so many people because of the fact that you have done all these pageants and that you're continuing to do so, not just in Florida and not just in New York, but all across the country too. Now, your time in pageants was only the beginning of many opportunities to head in your direction. You are also an autistic actress who stars as the title character of the short film Mandy's Voice, which was also the official selection for the 2024 Saturn Returns Film Festival. Can you tell us what Mandy's Voice is about, and What ways are you similar and or different to your character?
Well, it is a movie about a non-speaking autistic girl who's trying to find her voice metaphorically in the world and trying to embrace who she is. And I feel like that is very similar to me because I'm always trying to find my voice and who I am in this world. And I'd say that we're different in the respect that we're on different ends of the spectrum, because I think it's special to me because I started out as a non-speaking autistic when I was little. I was non-speaking up until the age of 5. So that's why the role is very special to me, because without my mom's help or various different types of therapy, I could have ended up like my character. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I just think it was a great eye-opener, and it was great to go back to my childhood. It's like, you know how actors really get to do that research and be a method actor. I got to really, really do some method acting that most people who get cast as an autistic actor and don't really have it may never appreciate.
Exactly. And something that I think is really kind of cool about the fact that you play this character is that you are also autistic, and you know from personal experience.
Well, there's actually a really heartwarming story about that, because I was originally cast for this role, but I felt very bad about it being a speaking autistic. And I told the director and the casting director, please try to find an actress who is non-speaking and then maybe get back to me. And I mean, I'm not really getting cast for anything right now, and I'd love to be in something. But this was really dear to my heart. I feel like in movies, we should have people play a part authentically, but they listened to me. And unfortunately, the non-speaking actresses, they did a great job, but it was just the lights and the sounds were really throwing them off. So they told me that and kind of begged me to play the role, and I said, okay. And that's how the movie was born.
I think what you just said right there is so incredibly important. And it's the direction I think that not just Hollywood, but I think like other theaters and other film production companies in, let's say, New York, in London, in Florida, in Georgia, in Los Angeles, like all over, they need to better understand that the entertainment industry needs to move in a different direction in terms of really listening to authentic voices in positions where a person is neurodiverse. And the fact that they listened to you and they really took that acknowledgement of, oh, we need to look for non-speaking autistic actors or actresses to play this part, it is incredibly important, because for so long, we have seen not very many roles that have been played authentically by actual autistic actors. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great shows out there, but unfortunately, a lot of those parts are not played by autistic actors. But when I'm looking at actors or actresses right now that I think are great for parts, like, for instance, you, Kayla Cromer, Tal Anderson, Lillian Carrier, Abby Romeo, they are some of, I think, great up-and-coming autistic actresses that I think can take this entertainment industry and literally run through it. But for some reason, the entertainment industry doesn't see that just yet. But if it means that we have to continue to kick down those doors, then that's what we need to do. But the fact that you're such a great advocate already and said, hey, I think that you need to take this time to really look for more of the authentic actresses that I think would be better at playing this part than I am, I think it's a great role model-esque trait of you that I think makes you so appealing to so many young girls and autistic women out there that are trying to break into being in entertainment, but for some reason are struggling how to. So in addition to your modeling and your acting, you also run the nonprofit organization Abilities Beyond Disabilities Incorporated. I had the chance to actually see the fundraiser that you had 3 years ago in California. We were just coming out of COVID. And the purpose of your organization is simply inclusion for all. What got you started in opening up Abilities Beyond Disabilities Incorporated?
Yes, I'd like to mention that fundraiser before I forget. All of the money went to so many people with disabilities because I really want to focus on schools, funding for people who don't have it. And it was such a good cause. And it's all going to be out of order, but I need to start how I started it first because it's been so long. It's been over a decade in the making. Wow. Yeah, very, very, very wow. But the origin story was actually me being bullied in middle school. I took the bully's words, wrote them down on paper, and put them on their lockers. So if they called me weird, I would just say, I like your outfit today. Or you have a nice personality, something like that. But then the teacher caught me and said, you should do something with this. You should keep doing nice things. So I started Ability Beyond Disabilities because I wanted to help people and bring positivity, especially to those like me. So all the funding goes towards schools, people who don't have housing, jobs, and that's where all the money in that fundraiser went to.
That's fantastic, actually. So you actually took the words that those bullies back in middle school and you actually turned it into something positive. That's incredible. I'm just going to put that out there right now. Me being in middle school and being so bullied severely, I was never able to do that. As the Selena Gomez song goes, quote, kill it with kindness. You're literally doing that, which is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I always believed in being positive, even though it was hard. And it's also like having someone to support you because a lot of my teachers were just in their own world and not very positive. But I'm glad that teacher was there to tell me that I can do this. I can turn it into something positive.
A lot of people don't really realize that autistic people that get bullied, it sticks with them for years. I still get trauma sometimes and I suffer from PTSD from the things that I went through growing up, as I'm sure you probably do as well. Yeah. But it's the teachers that really genuinely care and the people that also play a valuable impact on our life. They can't change what happened in the past, but they allow us to move forward and use that as motivation to turn it into something good, which is, I think, super incredibly important. Now, we both have something in common, and that is that we both belong to Epic Players. Now, for those of you that do not know about Epic Players, or in case if you were living under a rock, Epic Players is a neurodiverse theater company with branches both in New York City and in Los Angeles. Now, you joined the original branch of Epic Players in New York City back in 2022. I literally just started with the Los Angeles branch of Epic almost a year ago. How has Epic Players helped you with performing and expanding opportunities for autistic and neurodiverse actors, singers, and performers?
Ooh, that was a while ago. That was when I was still living on Long Island. But I saw them doing a performance. I think that was when they were still doing Spelling Bee. And I just thought, I gotta audition for this. So I did. And I think my audition was not the best. What? I didn't think I was gonna get in. No, I had COVID. That's why I was on Long Island, because I almost died from it.
Oh my gosh.
And on Long Island, they have better hospitals, or at least they did at the time. Because in the city, which is where I was trying to live, they were so crowded and nobody would see me. So my mom and I went there because there was literally nobody. And I had to stay there to recover. So when I did my audition, my singing voice was not the best. So I didn't expect to get in. But I did, and I was very surprised. But I love Epic Players, and they helped me so much with coming out of my shell, making friends. My first play I did was Tartuffe. Then I did a few cabarets, I did some stand-up, and then on to Spring Awakening, which was really intense.
I remember seeing previews of it for Spring Awakening just through word of the mouth here in the Branch in LA, and I heard that it was really, really good. I actually want to ask you, so back in December of 2023, it was announced that Epic was going to actually open up a branch in Los Angeles, and you actually participated in a fundraiser to actually help raise money to help pay for Epic to be launched in LA. What was that like for you?
Yes, it was partly my idea, and I sort of did that fundraising thing, and I participated in it. It was really cool, and I don't know, because a lot of my LA friends, they talk about wanting to do theater and make friends. I know a lot of people out there, and I just thought that would be a great idea if we had Epic out in LA, and it just happened. We raised all this money, and that made me so happy, and that's where I did one of my stand-up shows.
Yes, I remember watching your stand-up show, and I'm like, this is actually really funny, I have to say. I have to be completely honest with you, Rachel. So my girlfriend and I came to see it, obviously, with a bunch of your LA friends, actually a bunch of our LA friends. And I thought, you know what, this is actually a really great organization. I am hoping that it goes well. Then I get an email from Epic saying, you know, we've heard that you have had a really great theater background. We want you to come and audition. And I'm like, wait, are you sure you're talking to the right person? I haven't sang since college. I haven't acted since high school. Are you sure you really want this dusty old 30-year-old that lives in Los Angeles? Are you really sure you want that? So I went into audition. I recited a monologue from Only Murders in the Building and sang a Louis Armstrong song. And then they're like, oh, by the way, you're in. I'm like, wait, what? Really? Already? I have to, by the way, thank you and your mom for literally passing my information over to Jessica and her team, because what Epic has done so far in Los Angeles has been incredibly exciting. We already had two great showcases, and we had our inaugural showcase back in June, and we started out with 14 players? Yeah, 14 inaugural players, and we've now doubled in size. We just had auditions for a new batch of players coming in, and it's pretty amazing of just how the New York branch of Epic has had opened all of these doors for Epic in LA to happen. And Epic LA would not be happening if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for Connor Tagg, if it wasn't for Alex Reeves, who really helped Epic New York launch in the first place. You know, because when I think about it, Good Morning America did this really great segment on Epic and all that it has done, not just in New York, but in Los Angeles as well. And it's so exciting to think about the opportunities that people are getting as a result, and how a lot of great people are getting such great work as a result of it. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And it's an honor to be sharing Epic, not just with the people in LA, but also with you and with the fellow New York people as well, because it's so nice that there's a great community building. And who knows, maybe we might open another Epic branch somewhere in the United States. Who knows? Let's go.
That's the plan.
So now we're just a few days into the new year. It's kind of crazy that 2025 has already just started just like that. Tell us a little bit about any up and coming plans that you have set in stone for 2025. And what can we expect from you in terms of advocating, modeling, and acting?
Oh dear. Well, I'm always living in the moment, so you never know what's going to happen. But I know my birthday's coming up on January 31st. So
hey!
Yay! I'm going to be 28. Happy early birthday. Yes, so I'll be doing a lot of spending time with my family and thinking about where to eat, what I'd like to have as presents, but I really don't think about the presents. I think about just being glad that my family is alive. I have my mom and dad left. I know that's kind of screwed up, but you know, that's the situation at hand has left me thinking that way.
It's the little things that count, honestly. And people don't, I feel, always realize that, you know, sometimes we want the bigger things in life, but in reality, it's just the little things, just like spending time with your parents or spending time with family that really honestly matters at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. And as for advocacy, I'm probably going to do that a lot more because I talk about autism a lot, but I was recently diagnosed with ADHD, which was a shock for me. And I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder in 2021, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So that was all really a lot for me, but I think there's a first time for everything. And it's all connected to autism, and I think people should be more aware that we can have all these intersecting disabilities.
It is so important for people to remember that one person doesn't just have one disability. It can be a variety of it.
We have so much variety. It's amazing.
It really is. And speaking of variety, it came to my attention that you've not only joined the Flute Foundation, but you also have actually become a representative for the Flute Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Flute Foundation is and what is your role?
Well, I've been a part of the Flutie Foundation for a while now. I'm one of their ambassadors, and I've been a part of their choir for a little bit, but that sort of extended into Stars of the Spectrum, which is a project they're doing, and I've sort of taken more of a remote producer mentorship role because everyone in it is more interested in writing their own music, and I'm more of a Juilliard trained opera singer, so it's very different, but I'm happy to be a mentor and see people shine. And we recently have our first album for Stars of the Spectrum, which I oversaw and promoted. I didn't sing on it because I admit I was a little nervous because everyone was writing their own music, and that is something I'm not good at, but I was happy to promote it. And we're doing another album now that they want me to sing on, and it's going to be more of a rock heavy metal album, and of course I couldn't say no to that.
The heavy metal and rock and roll is literally your favorite genre of music, so it's like, how could you pass on the opportunity if it's your favorite genre? Come on.
Yes, and the whole point is about showing autistic artists and showing that we can shine. It doesn't matter our disabilities. We can shine. We can write music. We're talented. And I love this project.
Absolutely. So if any record labels are hiring out there, or if any record labels are looking for the next big star, check out this album that's going to be coming out really soon. It's in the works.
We have two albums, Stars of the Spectrum 1 and 2. We're currently independent and backed by the Flutie Foundation itself. But if there are any record labels that want to back us, that would be amazing.
Columbia Universal, this is your chance. Autism has become more mainstream now more than ever. People are becoming more aware and accepting of autism at an enormous rate. And my question for you is, what would you like to say to all the people out there that are not autistic but want to know how to better help support and encourage other autistic individuals?
Well, I'm glad that so many people want to support us, but the best way you can do that is to listen to us, because we have voices and we're not just here to be props or stuff like that. Because unfortunately, I have seen that in the media, And that's just not how it is. Listen to our voices. Listen to our perspective. And that's how you can be an amazing ally.
It's so important what you just said, to listen to our voices and what we have to say. Because sometimes, unfortunately, what we see in the media can kind of get misconstrued. A lot of people that aren't autistic don't necessarily realize, you know, oh, they might like this, or they might, you know, engage in that, when that's honestly not the case. Hearing what we have to say from our own personal perspectives combined with our own life experiences is super key. And having that authenticity is super important as well, because it's like the saying goes, if you met one person with autism, you've honestly only met one person with autism.
Yes, I mean, I have a funny story. There was this new friend that I made, and she got me a train snow globe for Christmas. I know she meant well, but come on. Thomas the Tank has been really fire lately, but this was...
It's always been fire.
It has, yeah. I mean, Wallace and Gromit is better, though.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah.
I like the sound of that. Honestly, your friend needs to get you a Lego flower snow globe instead. I think that would be right up more of your alley.
I think, or mate, Lord of the Rings Lego set. I saw that when I entered the store, and I was just like, oh, yes.
It's so fun now, like when you pass through a store and you just see something, you're just like,
Yeah.
Must need it. And then you look at the price tag and you're just like,
it's okay. Like, that's more than my rent.
It really is. Oh my God. Like, when you even look at stuff now, it's like you're looking at furniture to get for an apartment or for a house. And you look and you're like, this is more than the bills that I pay each month. What the heck?
Yes.
But I have to say, though, it's so important that, again, people listen to what we have to say, especially coming from both you and I. We're both very outspoken in terms of how autism works, not just for us, but for different individuals as well. And what I think you have done in your decade-long career already, and it will only continue to grow and grow and grow and grow as the years progress, is that you consistently show this unique perspective and a great perspective of how autism needs to be more looked at in the media. And what I think you've done in all your accomplishments so far, whether it's competing for Miss America or doing movies or performing for the Flutie Foundation or doing Spring Awakening with Epic Players, it gives me a lot of excitement to see that your career is only just beginning. And it's super exciting to see how your self-advocacy is only to grow even more and more and more and more and more with all these amazing opportunities that continue to come your way.
Oh, thank you. I mean, sometimes I feel like, what else can I do? I don't know, but I feel like there's so much hope. There's a lot more room for opportunity. I can't wait.
My thanks to Rachel Barcelona for joining me on this episode today. Feel free to come back anytime you'd like. I always enjoy catching up with other autistic individuals and hearing how they're continuing to change this narrative on autism and how more autistic individuals are only going higher and higher and higher and higher in the industries that they love so much. If you like what you heard on this episode and want to hear other episodes or stay tuned for future ones, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I will see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.